You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the tree right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand, and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Some strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his stifles knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Where part of it gonna hell? Out in the St. John's Swamps. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Scardy. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Marco Bill. Tom won't be with us tonight, but boy, do we have a list of guests on the lineup tonight to talk about our favorite creature. I'd like to thank all of our listeners out there for all the emails. For all the, also the little comments on Facebook and other things that you've given to us. And I appreciate all of your, everything that you guys ask questions about, calls, everything. There's a lot of people excited out there right now. The Bigfoot Hotline has been really hot. last week, I think last Wednesday, had four calls just in within about 2 hours. And so the weather is, it appears that the weather, the significant changes in the weather have had a really, really drastic effect on how these creatures, and other creatures as well, not just the Bigfoot or the Sasquatch, but other creatures are holding up for this winter. And there's been several areas where it has just drastically changed. The temperatures have changed. Where, as I've told you before, normally these creatures usually travel in family pods. usually they have, there's a migration period, and they usually migrate north and south, winter and summer. But there are others that stick around the area if there's adequate food, shelter, and water. The area is good for their, you know, for their family. And so, you know, what's happened is this year has just been unbelievable. We've just had so many calls. And for, I'm not just talking about one area of the country. I'm talking about all over. I can't name a state. Other than Hawaii, we haven't had a report from Hawaii yet. But every other state, I mean, multiple. Michigan, I think in 1 week, I had 4 calls from Michigan, 3 in the same areas. But, you know, it's just amazing. Rhode Island, little teeny-weeny Rhode Island last week. Newfoundland. My gosh. all over New York, Pennsylvania, Alabama. We've had a couple in Tennessee, 2. Where else? Oh, my gosh. Oklahoma. And another in Nebraska. Where else? My golly. I mean, I can't believe. They're all over. And these reports are coming from, they're kind of coming from researchers, people like us that are out researching these creatures. They're coming from everyday people out there, you know, just like you. And they're not out looking for the creature. I mean, these circumstances just happen to happen. And when they happen, you know, I mean, if you see a pretty good-sized creature, I think one of the first things you do is it's a pretty scary experience if you've never seen anything like that before. And, of course, you kind of switch into survival mode, and you want to get the heck out of there. But in most cases, the creature is doing the same thing. They're kind of shy. They don't usually want to show themselves too plainly in front of everybody, but they'll take off in the other direction usually. But anyway, tonight we have some wonderful guests here. Our first two guests, Daryl and Steve from Colorado, and Daryl's a real cowboy. He's been working on one of the largest ranches there, I think, in probably the United States, pretty big. And he's been a cowboy now for quite a long time, I think maybe 10 years, 15 years, something like that, 10 years, I think. We'll ask him when he comes on. But and his friend Steve, has a background. Now, Daryl had the encounter experience, and Steve, I'm not sure if he had an encounter experience, but he's had a lot of his background is he was a sheriff in the area there. He was also a federal officer, and I believe it was a park ranger. I'm not sure if they call them park rangers or what they call them, but, you know, wildlife. He spent a lot of time out in the wildlife in the areas where you know, everything is. And so he has a lot of experience and background in how animals and creatures in the forest, especially in Colorado, live. And so, I'm going to bring them both on right now. We got Daryl and Steve. Daryl and Steve, how are you?
Good, just fine.
How are you, Steve?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
Steve, I hope I didn't misrepresent you, but I mean, you've got a pretty wide range of experiences, right?
Yeah. I actually started out. When I was 17 in mountain rescue, and my emergency service career was 28 years, culminating as a federal ranger in Yellowstone National Park, law enforcement, and Grand Canyon. Now I'm presently with Ranger Wildlife Services.
Wow. Man, I bet you love it, though, huh?
Yeah, I do. I do. I love wildlife. I've always loved it. When I was 10, I'd get home from school and get on my horse and grab my dog and head up in the high country, and spent most of my life in the mountains.
My gosh. Now, have you ever had an encounter experience with one of these creatures, or?
No, I haven't. But of course, I'm interested in anything in the wilderness, and so I've watched documentaries and read and some stuff on it. And I guess what I would like to speak to is some of the people that the naysayers that are some of their arguments. I'd like to speak to that. You know, they say, you know, if there was a Bigfoot or Sasquatch out there, you know, why haven't we found any bodies, any corpses of them? Well, being in the wilderness most of my life, and my profession takes me there. When you look at mountain lions or bears, which are all over the United States and North America, how often do you come across the carcass of a bear or a mountain lion in the wilderness? Not very often.
I understand totally. Yes.
Yeah, and you know, there's, like I said, there's quite a bit of them, quite a few bears and mountain lion. But when you look at the wolverine, which there's a lot fewer, I don't know of a single person that has actually found a wolverine carcass in the wilderness, and we know they're there.
Mm-hmm. But, and one of the things, Steve, I think that happens that people forget or don't realize, and it's probably just ignorance because they haven't really been out there and they don't understand. You know, they think because a body is killed that it's automatically going to leave all kinds of residue, but nature has a way of disposing of it very quickly.
Oh, absolutely. We see this in Yellowstone. You know, the wolves will take an animal down or bears, and there'll be no sign of that animal in about 2 weeks. And
yeah, I know. It's amazing. So,
yeah, nature just cleans it up just as well as you can possibly imagine. So, you know, what else can you say? There's a lot of animals out there, but you just don't get to find carcasses very often.
No, and I understand that. Thank you for, and I thank you for bringing that out. You know, one of the things we're going to have at the end of the show, about a 10 or 15 minute period, and what we do is we open it up to all of the guests that are on there to be able to ask questions, and I'm sure, if you wouldn't mind, we'll have probably quite a few questions for you because you do have such a varied background in this stuff. And
I'd like to add one other thing.
Sure.
You know, speaking from a law enforcement perspective, you know, we put people in prison because of fingerprints, using fingerprints as evidence. You know, we put people behind bars, so it's called dermal ridges. And the interesting thing that I found, and, you know, I always like to look at the forensic part of it, but, you know, what really started leaning me towards the believing part was that, you know, in these plaster casts that had been taken, they found these dermal ridges that you find on feet also.
Sure.
That in those plaster casts, it span over a couple of decades of you know, collecting these casts, and also hundreds of miles apart. So I just don't see how that could be faked.
I agree with you.
Nobody's explained that to me yet.
I know. We've taken quite a few casts, and some really pristine casts with some really, I mean, really good dermal ridges. There's also a torsal break in that foot, and the torsal break is also because it's kind of like a hinged foot. I'm not sure. It's got a lot of weight. One of the things that amazes me is many times when we see these footprints, and it's not just mud, but in soft earth or whatever, you know, we'll stand near the same footprint and barely even make a smudge in the soil. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
And here this thing is about an inch down.
Yeah, you can tell so much from a footprint, the direction of travel, the weight of the creature, approximate weight, you know, and any disfigurements it might have and everything. So that's all right there. And like I said, we put people behind bars using dermal ridges, you know, as fingerprints, and why can't this, you know, they accept this, because this is, you really can't fake that.
Nope. And one of the other things we did, we have a lot of problems with various DNA labs. And the reason is because they, when they do the DNA, they don't want to come out and say this is a whatever species, right? Especially on a Bigfoot, because their reputation's on the line and all this. So what they'll do is they'll come out and say, well, unknown species, not ape, not man, unknown species. Well, what we had was many samples of different hair. And so then we asked them, okay, take 6 or 7 of these samples and compare them. And they did. Mm-hmm. And when they came back, guess what? They were all the same. So it was the same unknown species, not man, not ape. So it could categorize that there's, you know, that these, that there is a, some sort of a creature out there. But it's difficult, very difficult, to meddle into the scientific community's waters. They have their own intrinsic evidence path that they have to take. I mean, we do have DNA on. And we've got several, actually there's several different species of this creature that are out there that we have DNA on. What we call them, call them all Bigfoot because we don't know what else to call them. I mean, because we just don't know what they are. And there's so much we don't know about them. But it's pretty amazing. And you're right, I agree with you totally, you know, about the footprints and the dermal ridges. We have handprints. Well, we have handprints. We actually have about a year and a half ago, we got a finger handprint in a peanut butter jar. And we, what we did, we took a plaster of Paris and put it in the peanut butter jar, and by golly, if it didn't come out, perfect. So we actually had the thumb and the finger of a, you know, of the hand of one of these creatures cast in plaster of Paris, and it had the dermal ridges and the fingerprints right on it. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, well, and also being a man-type creature, you'd think that it's going to have a higher intelligence and be able to, you know, stay hidden. I got to tell you, if I was in the out in the wilds and I wanted to stay hidden, you wouldn't find me. It's just that simple. It's that easy.
And these creatures seem to be pretty amiable. They're curious, and they come around and they like to look and watch us. And of course, if they didn't want us to see them, we wouldn't. And normally, what happens is when we see one, there are more around. I mean, it's not, they just don't travel usually solitary. They're usually traveling around in a, you know, like a, in family pods.
That makes sense.
And it's a pretty amazing thing. But I mean, we've had experiences where, you know, we've actually cornered, you know, other ones, and all of a sudden rocks started coming from the other side. They didn't hit us, but they came close to us to, as a warning to get, you know, for us to get out of there. And of course, we did. We heeded the warning. We we moved out of the area. You know. And they didn't hurt anybody, but the rocks were big enough to, and thrown far enough that, boy, I tell you what, if they did hit us, it would have taken care of us.
Yeah,
pretty big.
To get your attention, right?
Pretty bad. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go. What we're going to do is later on. Also, if you don't mind, I'd love to. I like your perspective. I like the way that you approach things. You know, it takes an open mind, and a lot of people forego that. I mean, they go with what the old legend is or the old story is, and, you know, there either isn't or there is, and that's the way it is, and there's nothing that can change. Well, science has been doing that for hundreds of thousands of years, and guess what? Science has changed every single time over and over again. I mean, even our planets here in the last 20 years has changed again. You know, Pluto's no longer a planet.
Yeah, how many things in science class did we learn in the 70s that is no longer true now?
I know. And it just, you know, what happens really is with a body of new evidence and new information, everything is subject to change. So what you have to do is you have to keep an open mind, and you have to weigh the different things against each other, and don't just completely shut the other thing out, because, I mean, as you probably know as a law enforcement officer, 20 years ago, even less than 20 years ago, DNA and many of the other forensic evidence things that we do weren't available then. And today, I mean, my God, the police officer down in his squad car can take a fingerprint right there on the spot and have it tracked. I mean, it's just amazing some of the things have changed.
And I think people need to also bear in mind that, a lot of people haven't been deep into the wilderness. And when you get back there, it is so vast and you can just, you feel like, an ant in the middle of the wilderness like that. I mean, you are just out there I think some people don't realize how easy it is just to lose yourself in the wilderness. Like,
I do. And you're going to meet today.
Don't want to be found. You're not going to be found.
What you're going to meet today, you're going to meet a couple guys that are very similar to you, Rocky and Swede. They both, they're from Arkansas. They're both, they spend a lot of time out in the woods as well. And they do some pretty long excursions. And what they would say is the same, very similar to what you're saying, is you just don't know when you get out there how easy it is to disappear.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're going to go and see. Daryl, how are you?
Hello.
Yeah, Daryl.
Hello. Yes, sir.
Well, Daryl, you know, you had an encounter experience. And I'd like you to, if you wouldn't mind, just share that experience with us, to all of our listeners. And could you tell us about when, how long ago, and all the circumstances? Just don't leave anything out. Just to tell us what happened, please.
Okay, sure. Yeah, you bet. Actually, Steve is a good friend of mine, and it was in Durango, Colorado, where I saw this. And it was February 21st, 2001. I'm a horseshoer. I worked ranches, and this particular place I was shoeing horses for needed someone to drive teams, so I started to drive teams of horses for him. And I was in the horse corrals. I was standing there, you know, in the horse corrals, trimming the foot of one of the horses, and the others were tied up to the post. And I was just underneath the horse, and I'm trimming the foot, and well, the horse kept turning his head to look at something. And it was off at the trail in the direction where we take our sleigh rides in, on. And, the horse kept turning his head, and I took my rasp and I poked him in the shoulder, and I said, put your head back. And usually that's enough to get his attention where he'll, you know, look my way and put his head straight where it's easy for me, where I could do my work. And he just kept looking in this direction. So I just put his foot down, and I stood up and looked over his back, and the trail that we take our sleigh rides on, about 30 yards away, broad daylight, about 3 p.m., I saw this Bigfoot. And it was a broad daylight, like I say. There was nothing obstructing my view. There was no trees. There's nothing to make me, concerned that it might have been a bear or, you know, I've actually killed a bear, and I got $1,100 fine for shooting the bear. So I know what a bear looks like. I've packed mules all over these mountains over here in Livinich Wilderness in Colorado for years, and I've been all over this country. It's the biggest wilderness area in the state of Colorado, and I've seen probably 20 or 30 bears throughout the years of packing mules all over these mountains, and so I know what a bear looks like. And And when I saw it, I just looked right at it, and it looked right at me, and it turned around, and it walked back into the woods the same way that it came in, on the trail that we take our sleigh rides on, and just disappeared and was gone. And I just stood there in the horse corrals as it walked away and watched it leave. And the horses, the only thing I couldn't figure out is why the horses didn't spook at it. And I came to the conclusion that the reason probably was that, being this was a resort where there's a lot of cookouts and everything, and they had a lot of food thrown away in the dumpsters, that this thing probably had a routine coming in and getting stuff out of the trash, and that the horses were used to it because it had come in so many times. And just like anything, after a while, you know, horses will get used to it and they won't spook. And they just, like I said, they just stood there. They didn't show any concern other than just looking at it. And, you know, like a llama or a rattlesnake or something like that, they'll spook a horse, and sometimes they'll run and they won't stop running.
But, right.
And, you know, anything that they're not familiar with, they usually will. That was what how horses react. But, and people have asked me before if I smelt it. Well, I'm standing in the horse corrals. No, I didn't smell it. I smelled probably a lot of manure. But, and possibly the winds are right. And, you know, people try to actually go down and out in the woods, and they try to hunt these things. And, well, you know, you really can't hunt a Bigfoot like you can a mountain lion or a bear, where you can take your people and your dogs, or you can get after them and run them up a tree, and you got them. A Bigfoot's not going to do that, you know. A Bigfoot's not just going to run up a tree and, you know, for you to shoot it and come out of the tree. It's just going to keep going. And even if a dog does catch up to it, you know, and you just put your dogs on it, like we do with the mountain lions, there's a wild cattle here, or a bear even sometimes will get treed by a dog. And, you know, it's a lot easier to hunt those things than it is or would be, you know, a Bigfoot. And the only way I think a person's really going to come across a Bigfoot is that if it's just by accident, like it was that day with me. Yeah, I never cared about these things. I was just living my life like everybody else. I had didn't care. I didn't have a belief. But seeing is believing, and 30 yards away, broad daylight, and the horses having seen it first, I know I wasn't seeing things. So that's pretty much how that event went that day. And bears, people have asked me time and time again, are you sure it wasn't a bear? Sure it wasn't a bear. And all bears are hibernating in wintertime, in February, typically, anyway. So, and like I said, it was not a bear. And all I can tell you is seeing is believing and knowing the truth. And I feel sorry for all the people out there that don't know and haven't had the experience, because you can live 10 lifetimes and never have the chance and opportunity that I did. And I just feel real privileged to have that opportunity, because you could live 900 years and never have that chance. I've talked to ranchers that have been in the woods and in the mountains all their lives. They're 100 years old, 80 to 100 years old, and they've never seen a Bigfoot.
Sure.
And I've
well,
even
Darryl, let me ranchers. Ask you, could I ask you a couple questions,
yes, sir,
about it? You know, when you now when you've seen this, could you gauge about how tall this creature was?
It was about 8 foot tall, is what it looked like.
Yeah. And what about its arms and build? What did it kind of?
Well, you know, to tell you, to give you something to go by, it looked a lot like that one, like it is on the commercials for beef jerky, except
a
darker color, and the face looked real, and the face looked real. So it was just kind of a dark brown.
Okay,
yeah.
And the kind of no neck, like a football player.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, that's what we get a lot of. And the reason I ask you this is because there are several different species of this creature, and they're different. There are differences in the build and how tall they are, and also in the body. you know, makeup as far as that goes. And there's a difference on some. And so I always, that's why I always ask that question. The, you know, one of the other things, I think you made a, what you were making a point about is our experience tells us that these creatures, you know, about dogs and other things, quite a few times, we have people who are out researching for these and they have dogs. And many times the dogs have cowered, went under the porch, wouldn't come out.
Right. Sure.
Would, you know, stay away from the creature. We had one guy in Arkansas. He's not there anymore, but he was a couple of years ago. And he had, he had hunting dogs, and they were trained, I mean, really good. And when he had his experience, he was trying to sick the dog to, you know, to go follow it or, you know, get after it, right? And the dogs would just go on the ground. I mean, they wouldn't go.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what it is. It seems to be something, but they seem to know, know that. Now, way back a long time ago, in the 70s, there's a guy called Ivan Marks, and he raised wolves to do tracking and things. And in one of his documentary films that he made, these, when they would find the tracks of one of these creatures, they would go and they'd roll in it, which would mean that it wasn't a threatened thing. It was kind of like a friendly thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Uh-huh.
In other words, it wasn't a threatening type of a creature, and so they would roll in the, you know how they roll in the grass sometimes,
right?
The dogs do. That's what they would do.
Right.
And so it was kind of funny. Some of the experiences that we've had that have ended up being like that, and your experiences, it's kind of neat because it was during the daytime.
Right.
Mostly these creatures are nocturnal. In our experience, they've been nocturnal pretty much, usually between the hours of about 10 to 4 in the morning. However, many times we have had sightings during the day or in the evening or early in the morning, and they've been, you know, the same. So it's kind of neat.
Right. Yeah, that's one thing I can tell you is that, you know, you get a lot of people see these at night. It wasn't a mistake of fact. It wasn't anything vague. It was clear. It was unobstructed view. Mm-hmm. It was broad daylight. There was no mistake in anything at 30 yards away where I was standing.
And Daryl, one thing I'd like to tell you, I've interviewed somewhere near about 600 people over the past 7-8 years now about these creatures. And you'd be surprised how many people, you know, family, friends, other, you know, the people that are closest to you seem to be the people that would not acknowledge or believe what you saw. And and it's funny that every single time they say, oh, it was a bear, oh, it was a deer, or anything but what you saw, because they don't want to believe it.
Right.
And it's amazing that happens, but that happens to everybody.
Right,
And I just let you know that it happens to everybody I've talked to.
Yeah.
It's been our experience. Like it.
Ever since that experience that I had, the encounter with that 2001, I've been doing a lot of research, and I found that as Steve was talking on the topic, he said something about not being able to find bears that have died out there in the woods. Well, I've done the research and I've looked into it, and I don't know if you've said this before on your show, but there's no one has ever found a bear in the woods that's died of a natural death. And, everybody wants to know why we don't have a Bigfoot body. Well, where's the body of a bear that in the woods has died of a natural death? There's 900,000.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we always say as well. I mean, we do that. We say that a lot.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it's a, because, and it's just what it really is, is I think what Steve said. People, you know, when you're back in the wilderness and you're out there, people are not aware of how it really is. And we're
right.
going to talk to Rocky and Sweet here a little later on. They have similar experiences, been back there in the wilderness areas, and it's the same thing. They'll tell you the same thing. Well, I want to thank both you and Steve for coming on the show. I'm going to mute you out now because we're running a little late, but I got to get a commercial in and get the rest of the guests on. But I want to hang around, if you could, please, until the end of the show. I know there's going to be a lot of questions for both of you.
Okay.
And I appreciate it if you would.
Okay, I do have
you
one
bet.
Little other piece that you guys could use if you want to talk about that later.
Sure.
We
can talk about that in the open forum.
Okay,
thank you, Daryl, and thank you, Steve. I'm just going to mute you out. You can listen to the rest of the show, okay?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl and Steve from Colorado. Let's go do a quick commercial and come back, and then we're going to talk about some more
in
stuff
August
here.
2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back. And let's go out here to the Choctaw Reservation in Mississippi to Theron. Theron, how are you tonight, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. Just, It's really cold here. I mean, here in the south, we don't get that kind of low temperatures, but here in a week or two here, we've been getting real, really cold weather.
Wow. Yeah, it's been changing back and forth. There's some different areas there for quite a bit. Well, why don't you tell us, you had some new things that have transpired here about some people that you've gotten some information from. Why don't you tell us about that?
Oh, well, I got wind that there was a creature sighted, which is right across the little town that I'm from. Our town is Philadelphia, Mississippi. And if you ever heard of Philadelphia, Mississippi, it was nationally known back in the 1960s with the three civil rights murders. And if anybody's over 45 years old knows about that, you know. So the sighting was actually in the area where the civil rights workers' vehicle was hidden adjacent to the Choctaw Indian Reservation. So it was near that swampy area where the sighting had occurred, from what my understanding. And right now, we've had, that was just really recently, like almost a couple of weeks ago. But, since Searching for Bigfoot Incorporated, Tom Biscardi, being over here, people have come out of the woodworks, you know, and call me and look me up and visited me at my home just to tell me their encounters and experiences, you know, and sightings. And we've had almost a couple of years ago, there was sightings and encounters just daily. But now, we don't have that whole lot of sightings now, but every now and then somebody's reporting a sighting here on the Choctaw Reservation. And what you were talking about, they travel in family groups. Just behind my mother's house has been spotted a family of Bigfoots, what looked like a mother and father and a couple of children Bigfoots, you know, sighted by my sister. And we've had sightings where a Bigfoot was carrying a dead deer on his shoulders going into the woods. And there's several sightings, including broad daylight sightings, you know. And the most incredible sighting I heard about here was it was last year, and a lady came to see me, and I've seen this lady around before, and I've never actually talked to her, but she came to my door, and she said she wanted to see me and wanted to talk to me, and so I went to talk to her, and she said, "There's something I got to tell you," and I said, "Well, tell me," and she said, "This was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we have, on the Choctaw Indian Reservation, we have 2 big casinos." She said she was headed to Philadelphia, Mississippi, which is about 3 miles down the road from the casinos, and there was this creature that ran across the road in front of her and ran in that little wooded area between the casino parking lot, and there's a pawn shop just about 100 yards away. And she came and told me that in broad daylight, this creature just ran, you know, and this traffic going back and forth all the time, you know. I mean, there had to be more people seeing it. But she was the only one that came to tell me about her experience her and her son had going toward Philadelphia. And these creatures are just walking around through my neighborhood here. And we have around my area here, I think we have an upwards of about 100 homes. And, you know, this creature has been walking through the area here recently, and people have sighted it. A good friend of mine told me that that he saw one cross the road just, I'd say, a good football field away from the tribal main administrative offices. And, I mean, they're just... They're not, you talk about Colorado, you talk about all these other places where Bigfoot is sighted deep in the woods. Here, they don't have to go deep in the woods. All they have to do is walk around the neighborhood. They might see one, but what I'm just, that's a fact. But, you know, I was being humorous, but.
Sure.
Yes, we have, all kinds. We've had different colors. We have a white. We reported a white Bigfoot, a black Bigfoot, a brown Bigfoot, a reddish brown Bigfoot, and an orange Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
So, and here it's right here. And the latest last year's sighting was just close to my house. Two sightings.
Wow.
About a quarter of a mile away from my house, you know, 2 sightings in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these houses, you know, and they're just walking through our neighborhood here.
Yeah, and we've had Taran, we've had other experiences where they're coming down, you know, where normally they're seen out in outward areas where there are less people. However, more and more. We're getting sighting experiences, I mean, right on the edge of town, in a couple cases, right next to a major airport.
Right.
It was amazing. Where the airport is, there's a little swamp area out in the, on the side, and then it's all big roads and freeways. And,
well,
it was on a freeway where this guy, he's seen it in the swampy area walking around, and he stopped his car along the freeway and was trying to click pictures of it. Mm. Pretty neat.
Well, you know, since, like I said, since Tom was here, you know, people just come out of the woodworks. And yesterday at the office, you know, I went to the our office, you know, relaxation area where we have the water and we have the coffee. And that was before work, you know, so work is at 8 o'clock and I get to work around 7 o'clock, you know, so some people get there at least 30, 20 minutes early. So I walked in and there's a group of my fellow staff members and they're all sitting around talking about the Bigfoot, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so, you know, it's, the topic is about Bigfoot because there's more and more sightings, and I believe that there's more sightings that have occurred that I haven't heard about yet.
Oh, yeah, well, you're in a hot spot, Saron.
Mm-hmm.
Both times, I mean, in all the times we've been there, we've had instances where we've gotten you know, different various evidences and things of it, layers, I mean, all kinds of stuff, footprints, mm-hmm. other things.
Well, you know,
well, we're running a little late today, and I took, you know, too much time in the beginning of the show talking about our listeners and stuff about emails and things like that. But I want to thank you for coming on tonight to share with us, and then we're going to open it up at the end of the show here for everybody, and you can. I'm sure you'll have some questions, but other people also have some questions of you too. You have been one of the foremost guys with us. You, Dave, Richard, and also Rocky and Swede. You guys have, you know, contributed every continuously in keeping track of things going on in your areas there, and letting us know. And we appreciate that. Thanks for coming on and sharing.
Okay. All righty.
I want to just mute you out. We're going to go to Richard in New York. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Taran. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's Taran from the Choctaw Nation in Mississippi. We're going to go next up here to Richard from New York. Richard, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. How are you?
Super. Well, tell us what's going on, my friend.
Not much, but you talking about the dogs?
Yes.
Bring something to mind. We had babysit my daughter's pug last summer, and I thought I was going to take my buddy into the woods with me, right?
Yeah.
Well, we got to a certain point, and Buster sat down, and I couldn't even pull him, Bill. I couldn't even pull him. It's just where I make the turn to go into what I call Indian country.
Yeah.
He would not go. And finally, I had to go back. And he trotted out so fast that you couldn't believe it. Now, my daughter lives on the back side of the area where I go.
Yeah.
It actually adjoined where she lived. And she called me one night, and she said there was what she thought was a Bigfoot in this little patch of woods that leads to the preserve in back of her house. Her and her husband could hear it stomping around. It was a two-legged animal. And they tried to put a light on it, and they got this big, huge growl. She was on the phone when this happened, talking to me. And it ran off on two legs and slid down this embankment. And I know, because I used to go back there and look. But this same dog, Buster, ran from the backyard, ran up the stairs, and hid under the bed in their bedroom. They couldn't get him out, so he must have known what they were.
Yeah,
you
well,
know?
It seems several instances that we've been involved there. The animals have acted really strange, especially dogs. It seems to have acted really strange. I think even Swede had an issue where the dogs come up on the front porch where they never come up to the front porch. You know, for yet another sighting here about a month or so ago. What? I'll tell you what.
I know you're running late.
We're going to open up here in a few minutes after Rocky.
Just one quick thing, Bill.
Sure.
In my area,
yeah,
there's been 2 BFRO sightings on their list for New York within a mile and a half or 2 miles of where I go.
Oh, really?
That's
pretty good.
I've never said that before.
Yeah.
So I'll let you run on. I know you're pressed for time.
No. We're going to open it up at the end. The end is better anyway because there's free speech. Everybody can talk to each other and ask questions and stuff.
Okay.
Thanks for coming on, Richard.
You're welcome, sir.
Well, that was, ladies and gentlemen, that was Richard from New York. And here we go. We're going to go quickly. I want to talk to Christian. Christian's on. Christian, how are you tonight?
Good.
Christian, why don't you tell us quickly what you've been doing?
I was walking up in my woods.
Yeah.
And I noticed that there is this big chunk of, like, a big fur sitting around, big dark fur, a long dark fur.
Yeah, and where was the hair at?
It was, like, stuck on a bush, or, like, a bush.
Uh-huh. Okay, and you took a sample of that?
Yeah.
Good. Now, did you put it in a plastic baggie?
Yeah.
Good. Way to go. And so, and how's it been? It's pretty cold out there where you're at right now. You're a lot of snow right now, huh?
Yeah. We're supposed to get a snowstorm tonight.
Well, I'll tell you what. What we're going to do is we're going to go on to Rocky and Swede because they want to finish up on one of the things that they started last week. And what we're going to do is we're going to open it up at the end of the show here. You just stick around, and we'll open it up for everybody. You can get in there and ask questions. How's that? And I'm sure there'll be a lot of people that have questions for you as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Thanks for coming on, Christian.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Christian. And Christian has been with us several times here. He is 13 years old. Just a few months ago, he had his he's actually had 2 or 3 encounters. between his grandmother's house and his house where he lives, and it's pretty amazing. We're going to go out here next to Rocky and Swede. Rocky and Swede, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fine. How about you, Swede?
I'm doing great, man. I can't complain at all. I'm not going to.
Nobody would care anyhow.
I know it.
Well, guys, why don't you tell us, the last, about a couple of weeks ago, you guys took off on a weekend and you took off on a trek searching out what you're going to do in August. And like 180 miles, 170-some mile trek through the wilderness areas, right?
We're just guessing. I've talked to a couple of people since then, and they told us that we were a whole bunch of miles short of what the actual distance is. They're talking, the one guy was talking more like about 230 miles.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what's a few miles?
Understand.
Okay, when we were out, while we were out doing the checking around, we stopping and talking to people, and we come up on a little just a wide spot in the road, place called Slaty Gap. Don't look for it on the map. But we saw a man and his son poking around out in the yard. We stopped and talked to him. And, like we said, the searching for Bigfoot hat, the searching for Bigfoot t-shirt, it always garners interest. Anyhow, they were definitely interested in what we had to say, but we told them that, you know, we was just looking around, we was talking to folks, you know, about had they seen anything of, you know, unusual or anything out there. And the boy was telling me that probably 3 or 4 years ago, I don't remember what he said, but he said that they had some pet coons and said that they had had they've had, you know, stuff going on at their around their place that they didn't really understand. They thought maybe a bear had been around. Well, he said that one morning he got up and was going to go outside and feed their pet coons. They had three pet coons. Well, two of them were boars and didn't get along at all with it. According to him, didn't get along with anything. You don't keep a male coon, and they just don't make good pets. But he had them all in different cages, in separate cages. Well, he said something tore into the cages, and when he went out there to feed them, he found coon hair, and coon guts, but that was it. Well, you know, I'm not above eating a coon, so, you know, I could understand that. Well, he asked me if I wanted to see the cages, so me and the Swede walked down there with him, and I was expecting some kind of little old wire cage.
Yeah, like a rabbit cage, something like that.
Yeah. But when we got there, it was like the expanded metal. People that don't know that, that's a heavy-duty steel mesh kind of welded metal. And it was welded on all corners. I asked him why they did it with, they made it out of that, and he said that's what they had. Well,
that's what he said. That's what we had.
Anyhow, when we got around there expecting a wire cage, we saw the coon cages, and the tops had been ripped open. Looked like, I don't know, looked like a top of a sardine can the way they were ripped open. And anyhow, whatever it was, it just helped itself. Well, I jumped up on the cage trying to bend it. I didn't have any luck bending it. I mean, I weigh, I don't know, 215, 220. But I couldn't bend it. Well, this thing, you know, he wasn't pushing down. He was tearing up. And he just, like I say, he ripped them open like, yeah, it, whatever it was, ripped it up, and a bear couldn't do it. I mean, a bear is strong and all that.
It was more manipulated than that. It was like rolled over, literally like a sardine can would be rolled over.
Yeah. A bear would have fought that thing for, and maybe sprung the door and got the coon out. But this, the door wasn't sprung. The top was tore off. The top was welded. Everything was welded. And the old boy had a welding shop out there in his back behind the house. Well, it was, whatever it was, had more strength than you're going to get out of a little Arkansas black bear, even a big Arkansas black bear, because even the big ones don't get all that big.
And another thing, Rocky, like we said, they would have tumped them all off those racks. You know, they'd have pulled all that down. It'd have been all out in the yard. It was all intact. It's just like they just stood up on top of it and peeled the tops on the cages. It was pretty weird.
Yeah, it was just ripped open. And the doors, the door of the cage, of the cages hadn't been sprung, hadn't even been opened. The top was just, the wells were broken, and it was just pulled open. I asked him, you know, if he saw anything else, you know, like hair or blood or anything on the cage, and he said, well, yeah, he saw lots of blood, but, well, that was coon blood, I would just imagine, and as far as hair, he said he never thought to look. But anyhow, we're going to be in that area when we make the walk through. They welcomed us and said that would be just fine for us to come back. But that's just another area that we're gonna walk when the time comes. And well, whether we see anything or not, it's still going to be an adventure. But that was the story that we had from Slaty Gap.
That's pretty neat.
it was pretty scary when you saw the damage done to the traps.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Hey, Rock, when we had talked last week too, I wanted to bring something up like we had talked about our, there seemed to be some implications from our caller last week that was having a little issue. Me and Rocky both had wanted to express to all of our listeners that we do not condone or otherwise participate in any kind of animal cruelty of any kind, and just having said that, we just wanted to let everybody know that, you know, somebody that calls in, it's been real.
He had a few too many.
Maybe, whatever. I was trying to be tactful about it, Bill.
Yeah, I know.
He's trying to be tactful. I was gonna say something about, you know, incest or something like that, but I'm not going to.
we don't
particularly
wanted everybody out there and that listen, you know, to that, you know, we're on the, you know, we're all out there to enjoy the nature and to enjoy the experience, and you know, if we're fortunate enough to put our eyes on a Bigfoot, it's the guys from Colorado were saying it's a blessing, and that's what we're all about, you know, and we just really don't try to fall into all that ignorant stuff that was going on with that guy. But I just had to say that because it's been bothering me all week, and me and Rocky's been kind of talking about it a little bit.
Well, just to remind everybody, what happened was that we had an individual come on, and he had an encounter experience, but he had also had probably too much to drink, and he had told us that he had taken a pit bull, smeared rabbit blood all over it, hung it upside down on a something, and it was hanging outside screaming, and he was waiting for the creature to come and get it. And it was kind of a gory thing. In a way, not absolutely a way to treat any kind of an animal.
It needs to be known. We hunt.
Yes.
We hunt. We kill animals. But we are 100% for the quickest, cleanest, most pain-free kill possible.
You know, it's all fair chase, you know.
Well, guys, let's open it up for everybody. Let's start the forum. Should we?
No, good.
Well, Christian, we got Christian on tonight, guys.
Yeah.
And here comes Richard and Daryl, Steve, and Theron. Everybody's on. We're all on the line together. Does anybody have a question, let's say for Steve first?
Well, I don't have a question. I just appreciate Steve and Daryl bringing up the point that, I mean, just like me and the Swede have said so many times, we've hunted our area for years now. We've seen lots of live bears, but never once have we ever seen a dead bear out there other than the one that used to come around our camp all the time causing trouble. The old boy shot it. Other than that, we've never seen one that's died of natural causes.
Or a skull or a bone or anything of a bear.
Nothing.
Nothing. You know, and that's
fact. I'm glad that, you know, that they made that point also.
Absolutely.
I have a question for Steve.
Okay.
Steve, do you think I've read that big feet or Sasquatch kind of likes horses. You know, there's been stories of them braiding their hair and petting them. Do you think maybe the horses were so used to them that, you know, that they weren't afraid of them? Because of something
well,
like that?
You know, it's a possibility, and each horse is a, you know, horses are going to act differently towards different things, and I've been on horses. I was a mounted ranger on the north rim of the Grand Canyon, mm-hmm. and, you know, some horses spook easier than others, and then we've had horses that were bomb-proof, and bears wouldn't frighten them or anything, so I think just, you know, just like people, horses kind of have their own demeanor, and some of them scare easier than others.
Yeah, I know. We do have a horse, so, I mean, I know, and she's different than the ones that she's with. They all have different
uh-huh.
personalities.
Right, right, yeah. Absolutely,
well,
I think.
I think that horses have got a lot, you know, we have horses here, and horses can be jugheads, but in the big picture, sure. been on horseback a lot, and I'll tell you what, you can pay attention to what a horse sees, and you'll see a lot more than what you'll see on your own when you're on a horse's back. If you'll just pay attention to what he's looking at, man, they pick up on anything. I've seen everything from, you know, bobcats, the, you know, big buck deer that you was laying down in a little old patch of brush that you never would have seen. That old horse just look right over there at it and give you the heads up, you know. I think they probably see a lot more. And if there's creatures around there stirring around, old horse pick up on it all the time. They've probably had more experiences than we'll ever
have.
Well,
I think
actually,
every creature. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I was actually, and this is Daryl, I won this seat. I was the one that had the experience that the horse.
Oh, I'm sorry.
With the horse. But the horses, I think the reason why it didn't spook it is because it just had a routine of coming in and getting stuff out of the trash, and it just got used to it. Now, I trained horses. I gathered wild horses for the government on contract. I've noticed about horses is that horses can smell a long ways away, and a lot of times what will happen is they will smell something that and spook at it that you cannot see or hear, and that's why they are spooking and you don't realize it. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely, yeah. And they're smart too.
And the thing is I've ridden horses in Arizona where I've ridden near rattlesnakes and they're in a hole, and they can smell it, and you don't even know it's there, but they're spooking at something, and it's that.
There's a wise old man told me one time that it's a wise man that watches his horse's ears.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'll vouch for
that.
being in Yellowstone National Park as a ranger, I'll tell you what, you pay very close attention to your horse's manners and what he's looking at, because we have you know, being in grizzly country, that that's something that that's
yes,
just
sir.
Another tool that we use.
Oh, I could only imagine that grizzly issue. The black bears are bad enough around here. The grizzly thing, I'm paying attention to my oars.
Absolutely.
I agree. I'm glad that you guys come on, Steve and Daryl. I'm glad that you all come on.
Yeah.
Been
a little something.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, my question for Daryl there is when you look at the creature's face and he looked at you in the face, my niece had a very close encounter, and she said the face looked almost human, but the eyes, she said the eyes were the sclera, the white of the eyes. It wasn't white, it was red. What color eye did this creature have, if you could recollect?
Well, you know, 30 yards away is pretty close, but it's not just close enough to see something like that. So
mm-hmm.
I can't really tell you for sure, but the only thing I could say is it looked like they were really dark in color.
Yeah.
You know?
Daryl, this
yeah.
is Richard.
Okay.
Did the face seem more ape-like or human-like?
Human-like, most definitely.
Yeah, that's what we've been We've been saying that. It's not quite human, and it's not quite ape.
Well, it don't look nothing like an ape.
No. It's some. It doesn't seem to be neither. It's itself, but one thing I've noticed that the faces are kind of what I've seen. They're kind of flat. Does anybody notice that?
I know my experiences up here in Northern California. Most of every Bigfoot I've seen, even though they've been covered by hair, their face protrudes out, and they look more human than they do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
This one definitely looked human to me.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
we have a couple of videos made locally here, about 2 or 3 miles from my house, and creature that my cousin videotaped and the creature that me and my friend videotaped, the creature had it was a reddish, orangish creature, and its face was protruded out. It was more like a dog.
Yeah, what I wanted to interject on that, I think I'd mentioned before, there are several different species. One of the species that has been reported, and we've got photographs, we've got a lot of stuff, but we've also got a lot of reports on it, and it ranges anywhere from Minnesota, Wisconsin is a big place, Canada, West Virginia. The most recent sighting was in Minnesota about a year ago. It's and also down in Mississippi, as a matter of fact, but it's what we call a dog-faced creature. Now, it's not the standard. It's about 6 foot or 7 foot, but it's not the heavy, heavy kind of a creature. The most of the reportings we've had, it's not the heavy, heavy version. You know, in other words, like a football player's shoulders and neck, no neck and all that. And it actually has a snout and ears, but it walks on two legs, and it's, I'll tell you, it's really amazing. I've got a couple of pictures that we've gotten over the years here, and it's amazing. But that's what Theron is talking about, that they have a video of. Yeah.
Bill, I got an answer to a question a bunch of viewers are probably wanting to know the answer to, and they're probably listening right now. And I know there's two things you don't talk about a whole lot, and that's politics and religion, and I'm going to kind of touch a little bit on that. But just a quick note, the reason why I think the government and the scientists don't want people to know about DNA evidence and that they really exist is my opinion is from viewing it over the, 12 years that I've been looking into this and since I had my encounter, is that, it's possibly that these things, they're out there, and the fact is that, they're sort of an evolution of man from ape, and that would debunk the theory of, God-believing people, and if we thought we were from animals, which we could be, not necessarily, be the circumstances, but it just would really put a whole big damper into the whole government. I'm not saying that I don't believe in God and that there's no God.
No.
Well,
you know what, Daryl? You brought up a good point. Let me say something.
Leroy would love to hear this one.
If you'll take a look since DNA's come out. Okay, and if you'll read some of the DNA reporting, and you'll read some of the scientific reports on DNA and where we came from, okay, you will find that there are many theories right now that go all the way. Pretty much man originated in Africa. Well, they say Africa, but it's in Africa now. But it used to, when we were just one big old continent, right, we weren't all split up.
We were called Pangea.
Pangea, right. And basically, the DNA, when they trace this back, they find that there are strains of DNA now of even a different species. Now, there are many species of Homo sapiens. There are not many, but several different species of Homo sapiens. You know, the Cro-Magnon, several others, okay? And they didn't survive. Humans survived. And that's the theory, right? Humans survived. However, what they've more recently found and are looking for research on is through evidence where they found, you know, like a finger and a hand and something else they're trying to get DNA from, that it is mixed with these. The DNA is actually mixed. In other words, the Homo sapiens mixed. They actually interbred. So there are a lot of things that we don't know. Yeah, there are a lot of things that we don't know, and that science is slowly coming around to bring to light. And part of that is, but that's something worthwhile. Now, one of the things I wanted to tell you, you know, one of the DNA samples we had, I told you, was ancient human, 15,000 years. Okay, our skeleton is 2,500 years. Okay, the skeleton DNA is not human. It is three genomes from human.
A little bit of history, right, of a few radio shows a couple of years back, they even found out that Esau was also covered in hair. I think Leroy Blevins mentioned something about that a few years back.
Now, we've had a couple of shows on the Bible and Bigfoot, believe it or not. I mean, we've had some people come on, and we had a very good discussion, several times.
Oh, yeah.
On those things.
Can I make an observation on that?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
I studied a little paleoanthropology for a while in school, and, you know, these two things are kind of related. When you were talking about the different species of Sasquatch and stuff and how their facial characteristics were, I think a lot of that really has to do with the... you know, their environment will change a facial characteristic as to what they're eating, mm-hmm. the size of their mandible and such. And, you know, when you go back to the hominids, when they left the trees, they started walking upright because they were in the Serengeti and they needed to be able to look over the grass and watch for predators. So they became upright. And mandible became a lot more larger when they were eating tubers and that kind of thing. So,
sure.
You know, their environment has a lot to do with why hominids became upright and why the cranial vault started to grow. They started eating protein, starting the brain to expand and such. So when you're talking about the Sasquatch and the different species and stuff, I think the environment's going to change that creature considerably.
Oh, yeah, I would agree.
You know what I've noticed?
Like the deer, Bill, you know, there's two deer in Arizona that are so small because the vegetation is so weak. And then you go Wyoming and Montana, and they get bigger as you go north. It's the same way with the bears and everything else.
I've noticed on what I've seen as far as the face on, you know, it is human-like, but it does, if I was going to say it looked like an ape, it looks more like an orangutan than a chimp. Has anybody noticed that?
Well, it depends, Richard. Like I told you, we've had experiences where we have found many, that's why I always ask questions about the face and other things. There are some, as you go south, the swamp ape, skunk ape, they're more orangutan-looking or ape-looking in that venue, but there are others that are more human-looking. And I think what Steve brought up is probably very, you know, very true. I mean, your environment seems to build what your capabilities are, you know, what you end up looking like, based on, you know, the food, the terrain, all those things have an effect on change. I mean, just look at nature itself and different animals and different insects.
Well, look
of why they
that's
change.
Evolution.
Yeah.
Look at
there's
an old saying. It's an esoteric saying, but in a way it makes a lot of sense. It says, God lives in the rocks, breathes in the plant, stirs in the animal, and awakens in man.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't. My personal belief, and I'm not trying to. My personal belief is that death doesn't. None of this has anything to do to say that there isn't God or anything like that.
No, but God can live in anything.
It just means that how things grow and how they evolve. There's a method in a way that happens, and the survival of species, the fittest species and other things are just one of the factors that have kept us going all these years. That's why human survived, and many of the others didn't. They couldn't adapt.
That's why these things. That's why these creatures survived.
It's like a movie.
They're not dumb. They're not dumb apes.
Hey,
more
Marco,
than that.
I had a question for Daryl, if I could get it in there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hey, Daryl, when you said you were really close there, and I'm with you on that 25-30 yard distance. It seems close, but it's not close enough. But, I really didn't get the chance to really look, but you had a full blown broad daylight observation there. Did you have an opportunity or have the mind to look and see if you saw any genitalia?
No, I didn't, but it did look more like a male.
Did you notice it did look more female or more male, or did you get a...
I would have to guess it was a male. It's just a guess, but I can't say for sure.
I know it happened so fast, and everybody says, "Well, what?"
Yeah.
But I was just
I've had a lot of people ask me, "Why didn't you shoot it?" Well, first of all, I didn't have a gun with me in the horse corrals while I'm shooing a horse.
That probably
wouldn't
be good to be in the corral anyway.
Yeah. And had I had a gun, who's to say it wasn't a human? It could have been. I don't know. I can tell you, I know it was at least 8 foot tall. It was Bigfoot. It wasn't a human. It was not somebody in a suit. It looked it was enormous. But like I said, if it looked so human-like, if I admit it, it's possibly could have been a human, but I didn't have time to think on those long lines, so it was just gone before I knew it.
Right.
Daryl, were you blocked by the horse at all?
The horse was in between me and the Bigfoot. So the Bigfoot didn't see me until I stood up and looked over.
That's what I'm thinking. It didn't see you when
it
came so close.
And as soon as it looked right at me, and I looked right at him, he looked right at me. He just turned around and walked away back into the woods. And he looked back one time, and that was it, and it was gone.
Didn't take long either, did it?
Did he turn? Did he look over his shoulder? Did he rotate his whole upper torso to take a look at you?
He looked over his shoulder as he was walking away.
He was able to roll his head up on his shoulder and look back at you?
Just turn his head is all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, I just have to tell you, we are running way over time, but that's okay. We love it. Theron, Steve, Daryl, Richard, Steve, Swede, Rocky, and Christian, I want to thank all you guys for coming on tonight and sharing your experiences with us. I also want to thank you for, I think this is a really beneficial conversation. And you're all welcome. As you know, you're all part of our Bigfoot family. So don't be a stranger. You can call me anytime. You all have my number. And take care, and I wish you all have a good week. And everybody keep Bigfooting and keep the Bigfoot live. We'll see everybody next week. Take care now. Well, good night.
Hey, good night, guys.
Thanks for having us.
All right.
Bye, guys.
Good night, Tom Biscardi, wherever you are.
Yeah, remember who leaps the largest building, right?
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monster, mystery, legend, tales, and facts.